One of the things at this point is, you know, despite that dreadful performance in Dublin and the disappointment with it, is that for me at this point, Jason Kumas is beginning to look like a player that we can build a team around. Notwithstanding Giggs is still there, Bellamy's still there, clearly Davis, etc. But he looks like he's that creative midfielder, frankly, we've lacked for the best part of, you know, our entire history. He's turning up with more regularity. He's putting in performances with more regularity. And some of those are poor opposition, like Liechtenstein, for example. But the old adage is going to beat what's in front of you. But he's beginning to really look at home at international level. And a player, as you both know, I have an awful lot of time for. Frustrating, yes, he was. But when he was on his game, it was just a joy to watch. You sensed as well that, you know, Toshak did everything he could. For all of the issues that he had in terms of relationship with other players, you get a sense that he really did want to believe in Kumas.
It was misplaced faith, didn't it?
It turned out to be, yes. Clearly had the talent and the ability to justify that belief. He was one of those players that you just sensed could be that creative linchpin and be able to move the ball in the way that Toshak needed us to do. Or is this just rose-tinted glasses on my part?
Half-timed it for fixture. We didn't know if Kumas was joining the squad or not. This kind of lukewarm commitment, it's more frustrating, and he's more of that sort of cult figure because he urgently needed a player like that at that time. But he only ever will be thought of as a luxury player for us, because that's all we could ever rely on him to be, just a luxury if he turns up. And that's a real shame. You know, you're right to say that he did have a run of, you know, a few good performances around about this time, often in not very significant games.
Yeah, but this is the point. I mean, Toshak was having to take friendlies against whoever and whenever because too many of our players just simply weren't playing first-team football. And I think he recognised, particularly with the youngsters, you know, that production line is now beginning to produce talent. So we're coming up now to the New Zealand friendly. You know, Hennessy makes his debut. Gunter makes his debut. And, you know, there's other players that have emerged, but none of them are playing regularly enough. Well, Gunter was, to be fair, but too many of them weren't. And that's why he was taking all of those games. New Zealand friendly, we wore that wonderful white Kappa kit with like the red and the green alternate sleeves.
I'm not a fan of that kit, Russ. I know you are, but...
Oh, my God. Really?
No.
Okay, this changes things.
I'm off to bed.
That's the last time I think I stood on the cop for a game, actually, at the race course.
The last one for me was the Norway friendly. Well, I suppose we'll come to that soon.
Yeah, Gunter makes his debut. Hennessy makes his debut. Daniel Nardiello makes his debut.
There you go.
There's a blast from the past. He ran for three caps. And we played like we had just all met in the car park, I seem to remember. Because that wasn't even New Zealand's first choice, I seem to remember. And we were terrorised by Shane Smeltz.
Didn't he once tweet something about that? And it got picked up by him. Didn't he retweet it or something? Yeah.
I did, that's right, actually. Yeah.
That's the action of a man who knows he was briefly quite well known and regularly searches for his name on Twitter, isn't it? If I was in his position, I would do exactly the same thing.
No, I've got to say, I do not blame Shane Smeltz one little bit for that. It's a career highlight for him, surely, isn't it? You know, it's gone twice against a Wales team featuring Ryan Giggs and Craig Bellamy.
Yeah, I think he was playing for Halifax at the time.
Oh, dear.
A player emerges. Oh, Giggs retires, sorry. Before a player emerges, one says goodbye. And according to Red Dragon, to Phil Stead's book, he played in 64 of a possible 116 games, which isn't great. And I can remember there just being people resolutely at the Millennium Stadium, resolutely not getting on their feet to applaud him when he went off against the Czech Republic. And it was a bit awkward. I think I did stand.
He had a good day.
But not particularly enthusiastically. He did, yeah, he did.
He had a really good run and shot, which, was it Peter Cech was in the goal for the Czechs? It was a shame because it would have been a fairy tale ending. Giggs best games for Wales.
Just looking at that Czech Republic lineup, it's pretty tasty.
Did Ned
There's a lot of caps in it for a start. Jan Koller, Noah Rosicki, Barosz, Jan Pollack, Jan Kolowski.
Czech in goal, yeah.
Yeah, Peter Cech was in goal, you're right. Yeah. It's a pretty stellar Czech team. I digress. Yes, he did. He went 9th minute, so it was all sort of stage managed for him. Rob Earnshaw came on. Rob Earnshaw's a name we haven't really mentioned, have we? Because we scored 2 goals against the Trinidad, to be fair. We talked about that game, but not about Earnshaw's contribution. Earnshaw just really wasn't a touch-out player, obviously, but kept turning up and smiling and doing what Robert Earnshaw used to do. But yeah, so that was clearly stage managed. Giggs went off in the 89th minute.
What I will say in Ryan Giggs's defence a little bit, I agree with all those people who sort of struggle to get their head around his kind of turning up percentage. But he was the player who, if the setup around Wales at this time was not as professional as it could have been, he is the player who would have felt that the most coming from Manchester United. And it would have been very easy for him to walk away 3 years earlier, given his track record of at least seeming not to be that invested in turning up for Wales games. So the fact he saw out another 3 years under Toshack, actually, fair play to him. The qualification on that is he then played on absolutely ages for Manchester United and went on to be a really good player for another, 5 years. It's a little bit like that Gary Speed, you know what, there's more we could have got out of him had he been willing and had he wanted to hang around, to be honest. I was a little bit surprised he hadn't gone on some others out.
Well, no, this is the point, but he did stay longer than he might have wanted to. He was still only 33. As he carried on playing for Manchester United, you know, his role changed and then he moved more central and then he moved more deeper and he started playing in the midfield role and you begin to think, actually, where we were still persisting with, you know, the Carl Fletcher, Carl Robinson sort of axis, if you like, in the middle. Actually, if Giggs had carried on, could we have evolved him into a different role in that Wales team? And of course, we never know because he only ever played wide left or up front. That's an interesting question. What he might have offered the team had he moved more central?
At a time when Gareth Bale was evolving into sort of, you know, a left-sided player. I know that changed throughout his career, but, you know, we possibly could have had Giggs moving inside at a time where he was the least needed out on the left he'd ever been for Wales in the whole time he was there, yeah. You know, so.
Ledley might have been the casualty of that because, you know, he's beginning to establish himself in the Wales team as that kind of left-sided central midfielder.
Yeah, I think another interesting dynamic that now he's managing players that he played alongside for Wales in Gareth Bale and Wayne Hennessy in particular. McGunter obviously is around, not getting picked so often these days, but he did stick around long enough to kind of see the start of the revolution in a sense, you know, in terms of those players who would go on to achieve great things in the year 2016 and players who are still around now. You know, it's good in a way that he got to know Bale and Hennessy, particularly back then. I don't know, it's interesting because I thought towards the end of the last campaign and qualifying for the Euros that'll be next year, hopefully, Wayne Hennessy was particularly good. And we've talked a little bit about this, and he was excellent against Hungary, and for example, even though he wasn't playing regular club football, he hasn't played regular club football for a while, and maybe just that sort of like long-term relationship between Giggs and Hennessy might have counted for something there, that Hennessy felt like he's a guy who's got faith in me, knows me, because he's known me for so long. I don't know, but maybe there's something in that.
We've got the phone Sunday evening and somebody's retired. When we haven't had too much time to get people in. Ryan, strangely enough, for me, is the only one who did it the right way. Came to see me, didn't phone up. Quality, you know.
So, yeah, we draw nil in that game. That's our third. So, we've beaten San Marino, we've drawn New Zealand. Okay, not, you know, particularly high-profile opposition. We draw at home to Czech Republic. We then unearth a striker who's qualified for us via a grandfather from Llwynhendy, Nilnelli. We win in Bulgaria. Freddie Eastwood scores on his debut. So we've gone 4 games without defeat. We're beginning to look quite tight at the back, notwithstanding Shane Smeltz. And you begin to think that given that Earnshaw's not his player, he just doesn't fit into that kind of lone striker type role. But Eastwood has got a little bit of stature about him. He's got a bit of physique, he's got a bit of presence, but he also knows where the goal is because he's got a terrific record at Southend. By this point, I think he's at, is it Wolves? And Toshack says that he's worked hard to get him into the fold because, Leon, you and I both picked him in the last podcast, this better to burn out or fade away this Wales 11 of players who had short but impactful Wales careers. And Toshack talks about how he's the sort of striker that they've been looking for, the sort of striker who knows where the net is, which is a bit harsh on Robert Earnshaw. But Eastwood scores, and not only does he score, he's like really nonchalant about scoring as well, which is a thing I like to see with strikers. We've put a good performance out there. Neil Ardley makes his debut as a fullback we've all forgotten about. And again, it's this sense that, okay, is it, you know, and I'll hold my hands up. I was at this point going, I thought it might have been a corner turned last year or the year before. No, I think it may be now. He sort of looked the part for a while.
Yeah, he did.
Eastwood, he sort of dropped off a little bit, didn't he? He never quite fulfilled the potential he'd shown at Southend as he went on to his club career. Certainly not in how prolific he was. I guess like Kumas, or like what we were saying about Gigsdale, a player at a time we really needed him, who maybe didn't last or didn't materialise the way it would have been really good. Kind of really been full of promise for him. I thought he was going to be a good top championship, maybe even Premier League striker when he first emerged.
There's a lot of promise, wasn't there? And he really did look the part in that Bulgaria game. Just didn't happen, did it? Yeah, it was a shame.
And then we obviously lose the home to Germany, which, you know, there's no huge shame in that. I mean, Schweinsteiger, that day, just different class.
Yeah. Stoichkov, floating little, like there's a long list of opposition playmakers that have come to Wales and just destroyed us. And Schweinsteiger joined the list that day. He wouldn't be the last, unfortunately. We'll be coming to Lippmann in a minute, I'm sure.
yeah. And Closer as well. He scored twice that day, which is, given that he scored 70-odd international goals? 71.
Who had a sort of like one-in-one international record, something mental like that. Bellamy didn't play in that game, I remember, but it was something, I think his wife was giving birth, some. I don't think it was necessarily bad vibes with Toshack, was it?
Yeah, it wasn't anything to do with camp. This is brilliant. So yeah, so okay, we've lost to Germany. And Savage, in his newspaper column, says, there's more chance of me flying to the moon blindfolded than there is of you taking Wales to the World Cup in South Africa, he tells Toshack in his column, which is probably not hugely unfair, frankly, but was typically bullish and to the point. And of course, probably just doing to Toshack what Toshack had done to Hughes. He was now on the receiving end.
Yeah, I guess if you can't take it, you've got to give it. I think, to be fair to Toshack, he was pretty good at deflecting criticism. You know, he was not someone who kind of let it get to him at all. He had his ideas in mind and he stuck to his guns. You kind of liked it or not, and a lot of Wales fans didn't. But there was nothing that was really missing, even if there were a lot of noises in the media criticising him.
And whatever you think, expunditory, it wasn't personal. You know, that's how he felt about the team, and he called us. He saw no doubt that every time Savage was chirping up, he was wearing his chip very much on his shoulder. And to be honest, Toshack, he was sensible enough to leave Robbie Savage where he'd left him a couple of years earlier.
And then we went to that remarkable game then in Slovakia, where we dished it out to them in the manner that they dished it out to us in Cardiff.
That was Craig Bellamy's show, wasn't it? So you'd missed that Germany game through some family thing, I think his wife giving birth. And then he was back for the next game and just wow. You know, I mean, I knew he was a hell of a player. I was there for the Italy game, but I don't think I'd ever seen him turn it on quite like that before. It was just an extraordinary performance, really. It was just everything he touched turned to gold. I mean, with Bellamy, he was kind of erratic. It was like sometimes his shooting would be all over the place. I mean, he was always a hard worker. You know, he was a hard runner in every game, but sometimes it just didn't happen for him and he would shoot and his shots would go everywhere. That game, all his shots seemed to be on target. Everything he seemed to do was the right thing. Like, he was making the right decisions. It was just one of those sort of in-the-zone moments. And he was immense that game. And I think Toshack, who had a bit of a strained relationship with Bellamy, said himself that usually you get 22 players out there on the field who are quite evenly matched, but that was a game where there was 21 quite evenly matched players and one who just stood out a mile. And that's what Bellamy did that game.
Yeah, I know you think this is me trying to be a little bit hipster when we do it, but when we've just lists of our top Wales goals, I've always put the own goal at Jurica, I think the guy's name is, from that game in that list, because it is the epitome of what Bellamy does. I know he scores a couple of goals himself, but it's a great goal with sort of two or three quick passes straight up, building straight out of defence, and Bellamy puts the ball across, which he can't do anything else. It's as good as a striker's finish himself, because he's got to go for that ball, because Bellamy's put it so beautifully into the sort of corridor of uncertainty, and Simon Davis is going to knock it in if he doesn't do it. And it's just this kind of swift end-to-end in about 5 seconds move. It's brilliant. You know, if you can't remember that goal, watch it again. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it is. He deserved a hat-trick that day. So it had to go down as an own goal, but you know, you are absolutely right. It's all about Bellamy's delivery.
It's a moral hat-trick, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Morgan's clearance finds Davis. Calmly back to him from Robinson. Bellamy's already running. Here he is. Oh, brilliant, brilliant play. Davis has got a tap in. This time it's Klimpel who suffers from Bellamy's just incredible form.
That game was Marek Hamzik's 5th cap. So he played, but he was still a bit of a young pup in that game. Interesting as well, I'm looking at the two lineups here. We were the more experienced side that day in terms of caps, definitely. Although they've got players at Bayer Leverkusen and Napoli and Porto and Nuremberg and Bochum. We got Carl Robinson at Toronto.
So Hamzik was already at Napoli.
Hamzik was already there, yeah. Craig Morgan.
Top scorer in Napoli's history. Sorry, just an aside. Top scorer in Napoli's history, scored more goals for them than Maradona.
Really? I didn't know that. Craig Morgan played in that game, started. Alongside Collins and Gabadon in a back three. He came through at Wrexham, because I was living in Wrexham at the time, and he was coming through, and he was like, he's 16.
Yeah.
And he just, I thought a player who I thought had a real big future ahead of him, because he didn't know how to defend and just looked completely unflustered. Never quite happened. Oh, decent career, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, he won more than 20 caps, so he didn't qualify for a short and sweet team. So that's something. But he played a championship level, still playing now, a long career. You know, he's done all right. But, you know, if you come through as a centre-half when you're 16, 17 years old, you kind of think he might really go on to do something. And I suppose a bit like Louis Nyathanga, it just never quite hit the heights we'd hope for.
Dare I say Regan Poole. And I suppose this is the high point in terms of results. Toshek lacked the scalp. He lacked the big scalp in the same way that, you know, Hughes had with Italy, Yoroth had with Germany, with Brazil and so on. This was as close to that vintage definitive performance. Is that fair?
Perhaps from a fan's point of view, that was the highlight, the 5-2 win. Toshak's point of view, there was a game a bit later on which he considered the highlight. Wasn't certainly as spectacular in terms of the result, but was perhaps significant in terms of going forward. But as a fan, you can't beat seeing a team score 5 goals, can you? And winning comfortably.
It comes where it's one of those periods we were talking about earlier. Things seem to be getting a little bit better, don't they? The win against Bulgaria, the draw with the Czech Republic. No one really minds losing to Germany. Good win. Maybe we're on the cusp of something. Only for the very next game then to bring us crashing back down to earth with a massive jolt.
I'd forgotten this, but that was the very next game after this 5-2 in Slovakia. It's the 3-1 in Cyprus. Wow. All right.
I was just going to say, I've got the BBC report of that Cyprus game open in front of me, and just a few lines down, it says what should be on the gravestone of the Toshak years. The defeat puts a huge dent in Wales's hope of claiming third place in Group D to earn a better seeding for future tournaments.
The players that I had, apart from the fact that a few of them retired from international football, some of what were left weren't good enough. And this is where Brian Blin did a fantastic job. I think you can't buy players and you can't sell them either. And we would have sold a few if we could have. You're virtually stuck with what you've got. But it was quite clear to us that what we had weren't going to get us where we wanted to go.
If you are dead set in your ways on Toshak, either pro or anti, you think he was, you know, a real positive influence, a critical component in the future success under Coleman, speed and Coleman, or if you thought he was just a disaster and really had no interest in pouring over his reign again. It was too traumatic the first time round. I don't imagine we've changed anybody's fundamental opinion, but we may have moved people along the spectrum, perhaps. What do you think?
Yeah, it feels a little bit like a courtroom, doesn't it? Like we're the Toshack trials, and there'll be a sort of guilty or not guilty verdict at the end. I don't think it's that black and white. I'd like to think that we're sort of making the case for both the prosecution and the defence at the same time. I'm someone who thinks Toshack did more good than bad, but I have a lot of sympathy with those who just have no truck with the man.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. It's really compartmentalised, I suppose, the way we have to look at Toshack's legacy, and it's gonna fall on a few different things. How bad you see the situation as having been when he takes over the team from Hughes, which we talked a lot about last time, so I don't know if that will have changed anyone's views. Then you've got, I guess, look at the development of the first team setup, both in terms of personnel and professionalism. But something I imagine we'll focus more on now as we get near the end of his reign is the emergence of some of those players who would go on to be a big part of future successes. So there are a lot of different angles to come at interpretations of Toshack from, I guess.
I think you said this last time, guys, it's that sort of one step forward, two steps back. And so we go out to Cyprus and we're leading 1-0 at half time, and we managed to just crumple in the second half with, again, an appalling performance. And Toshack, at this point, there's been criticism of the players previously, but usually sandwiched. He just begins to let rip with the Cyprus defeat, and then even more so again in the following result, which, again, you know, it's only 2-1 in San Marino, which again is a pretty poor result, but poor performance.
Yeah, I think this is the point where we really start to see that 20th century manager dealing with 21st century players. And everything we've learned since then in club and international football is, as soon as a manager has to come out and question the commitment of players, are they too pampered? Are they concerned about the waves being too loud, lapping the shore outside their hotel room window, or whatever it was in Cyprus? That's the sign of a manager who's lost the players, who's lost the squad. And I kind of think at that point, you can criticise them all you like. And it was a very poor performance, and some of those players were very poor. But that is not the way to claw that back. You know, public slating of the players who were there, given that our biggest problem of that year is people withdrawing in the first place. It's a recipe just to make things harder for yourself and the team. And, you know, it happens again in the next campaign and in a slightly different way. And I think at this point, we're into an on-off period where Toshack just doesn't have a handle really on how to get the best out of his certainly more established players. And hence, we go into another period of transition of bringing younger players in.
It's pretty scathing. So yeah, after 3-1 defeat, the players will say they do care, and it's rubbish to say they don't. But did it look like they cared? It didn't look like it to me. Things went on out in Cyprus that made me wonder what we'd been doing for 2.5 years. After what I saw this evening, I'm obviously doing something wrong. We're in another 5-star hotel here looking over the beach. It seems a case of, lads, now if the waves are a bit too noisy for you during the night, just ring down and we'll get you moved to the front. I just remember at the time reading it and thinking, wow. I suppose in the Premier League era, the likes of Wenger never seeing anything. Remember those spate of red cards that Arsenal used to get in the late 90s, early 2000s? He never saw them. Ferguson backed his players to the hilt publicly, even though when we looked, you know, it was called the hairdryer treatment. We'd almost got conditioned to this attitude of, my players can do no wrong, have done none wrong, done nothing wrong, see no evil, hear no evil, in public, in the press. And so it just did seem to be so out of kilter with just the prevailing sort of culture, if you like, for him to say that. And then they put in a pretty grim performance in San Marino, albeit we won. You know, Bellamy comes out with a very, very, very sort of surprised, very candid. Like, you never really ever got that with Bellamy, I suppose. But seemed very genuinely shaken by the level of vitriol that the crowd were aiming towards the Welsh players. But then, and Toshack again disagrees, when people have travelled all that way to support the team and paid out a lot of money, they're entitled to shout whatever they want. Oh, to be a fly on the wall.
I've played for Wales for a number of years now, but it's one of the worst atmospheres I've been in tonight, you know. The Welsh crowd who came with us tonight were very, very vicious, like, you know, which is rare. It was an uncomfortable night to play in. You know, some of the chanting early on as well was vicious. And I think maybe that might have took its toll on the players as well.
So you're saying that actually affected the performance?
It weren't nice, mate. It's not nice. Actually, I'm desperately proud to play for my country, but tonight was the most difficult one I've been involved in.
John Toshek was very critical of you as players after the defeat in Cyprus. He actually used the word pampered for you as a group of players. How do you respond to that?
I'm not even going to get involved in it, mate. I know what you're looking for, and I'm not even going to go into the line of questioning, really, you're trying to get out.
Okay, thanks, Craig.
Further to that extract you read, Russ, about the pampered players in the five-star hotel. In the same book, I think it is, Peter Rees talking about being on his way back to the hotel and called back to go and see John. And he says, when I got there, he was sat in the changing room. It was clear what he was thinking, but I said to him, you've taken us into this situation. You've had what you wanted. Now you bloody see it out. So I guess there's a sense that the people above him still believed in the sort of longer term project. My feeling would be that perhaps that was the time for him to go. I think maybe he'd laid the groundwork for all the benefits we were going to see from his regime by then, with the right appointment. And I know that's a big caveat, because it's not always an easy thing to do, appoint the next Wales manager. But with the right appointment, perhaps a new man could have taken things on and we'd have been spared some of the further difficulties over the next couple of years. But you know, there was definitely still a sense at that point that we were partway through long-term development.
There was a real sense at that time, wasn't it, that Toshek seemed to be on the verge of quitting, which he didn't, but it wouldn't have been a big surprise if he had. It just seemed to be just dealing with, you know, modern players seemed to be causing him sort of a great deal of anguish, and he just wondered if it was more hassle than it was worth for him. But I don't know exactly what sort of kept him on at that time, in a sense. Was it just like his stubbornness, or had he perhaps already got the kind of view that, you know, there was another generation coming through who he would be able to kind of mould a bit more and would listen to him a bit more, because there was a sort of generation coming through who he was giving a chance to at international level, and that sort of huge generation of players was coming to the end, in a sense. I don't know exactly what it was that kept him on. It doesn't go into a great deal of detail about his motivation for even taking the job on as Wales manager in his recently released biography. I was hoping for a bit more about this period, but we don't really get it.
But I suppose he'd staked his reputation, I mean, his career's reputation, his entire professional reputation, but certainly as Wales manager, on qualifying for a tournament. If he's now thinking, okay, 2010 is the one, I forget whether he'd ever come out and said 2010, but if 2010 was yardstick then in qualification terms against which he wanted to be measured, then by going at this point would be admitting failure, I suppose.
I was going to say, he gets into this habit from about this point onwards of a couple of things. One is prefixing, like, these criticisms of the players in a way that makes it sound like he's criticising himself. So the example you just sort of read out included the words, I'm obviously doing something wrong, before making it clear that he didn't feel he was doing anything wrong. He felt the players were being rubbish, bad players. And he does exactly the same thing when he has a pop at Fletcher and Robinson and Kumas a year or two later on. You know, I made the mistake of blah, 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 but then it leads into a criticism of those players. So it does seem to be a manager retreating into sort of, not quite lashing out, because it's a bit more calculated than that, but certainly nothing that's very productive in terms of managing your squad. And the other thing is dressing up what, at the end of the day, are not that very impressive performances and records. I, like you, Russ, I can't remember what he said about when this squad would be aiming for qualification, but he definitely talked on a point about judging himself in 3 years' time in 2007. And at that point, he's sort of saying that campaign had six good performances from the previous eight. And I'm looking back through those results and those performances and thinking, that's quite generous about some of the six that he must be including in that. So it becomes a period now of sort of trying to talk up things that aren't that good, and then looking to talk about the number of youngsters coming through or what he inherited from Hughes. And all of that together just makes me feel like, do you know what, it's time to try something else.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's happenstance or whether it's a roll of the dice, a final perhaps roll of the dice by him, we go into the final two qualifiers of that campaign. We draw home to Ireland and we draw 0-0 away at Germany. The more important fixture taking place, or between those two games, though, is at Ninian Park.
For sure. I mean, it's one of the most, for me, it's one of the most significant games in the history of Welsh football. The under-21s beating France 4-2, deservedly beating France the night before that Germany game. It was a 16-year-old Aaron Ramsey just left school that summer, and a 17-year-old Joe Allen Field, I think Jack Collison and Sean McDonald. Basically, it was Welsh kids, literally, showing the same level of technical ability as the best young footballers in France. That was the point for me, watching that game in the pub in Cambridge, where I was living at the time. The only one watching, obviously. Not much call for Welsh under-21 games. Thinking, wait a minute, like, something's happening here. And I stayed on and watched Brian Flynn's interview after the match, and kind of he looked down the camera and he said, I've got a message for Dave Edwards, Joe Ledley, Wayne Hennessy, Neil Eardley, Louis Niatanga, perhaps one or two others. And he said, you better stay in that senior squad now because you won't get back in this team. Those players were all available to him. Well, you know, would have been available to him if they hadn't been in the senior squad. And Gareth Bale was actually injured at the time anyway. It just shows that he was working with an almost sort of second string under 21 team and still managed to beat France. So you got to think, well, there's something to this. And I just think that was a really significant evening for the development of Welsh football.
It was Wales who opened the scoring. Manchester City's Ched Evans chased down a lost cause and then a composed finish. The best of the action was saved for the final 20 minutes. Mike Williams giving the French a way back into the match, pulling back Gouffran in the box. Substitute Gourcuff sent goalkeeper Owen von Williams the wrong way. 4 minutes later and the French were ahead as substitute Payet fired this one home. 2-1 behind, but the Welsh youngsters kept going. Darcy Blake's determination brought a clumsy challenge and a penalty for Wales. Ched Evans was on hand to blast home the resulting penalty. 3 minutes later, and Joe Jacobson's free kick was spilled by the French goalkeeper. And substitute Mark Bradley scored from the rebound. Victory was then put beyond any doubt in the second minute of injury time, when a debatable foul on Simon Church gave Evans the opportunity to claim his hat-trick with another penalty.
Weren't many watching it in Cambridge. There weren't many watching it in Ninian Park, I seem to recall. I remember waking up the morning of the game in Germany and knocking the phone on. Oh my God, we've just beaten France. We've put four past them. And then you read the match review and you kind of go, actually, really, really thoroughly deserved that. You've obviously done the research for Little Wonder, of course, in terms of Brian Flynn's, you know, the circumstances in which he found himself picking those players, the motive behind picking some over others, or encouraging the advancement of some to the senior squad over others and so on. But the goalless draw, we were very resolute, to be fair. People like Dave Edwards made his full debut. This was Gunter's first cap since his debut, so it was only his second cap. He'd missed several games between the New Zealand debut and this. So it was very raw, callow team. Hennessy in goal, of course. No Bale, as you say. And we played okay. If we'd have won that game, it would have been a real, real smash and grab. Arguably undeserved sort of victory, but you know, we were fair for the draw.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth saying a clean sheet was significant in that I think Germany had Klose, Podolski and Gomez all playing. There's like 150 international goals between those three, so fair play to a relatively young defence for keeping them out.
No, absolutely. And Philip Lahm played. And I just, again, one of those vintage performances that you've seen from players, you know, often against Wales. You just have to, you know, clap your hands almost. And you just, it's a pleasure to watch. It was just an exquisite, contemporary, modern fullback play from Lahm. He was just excellent. As promising as that result and that performance was, and I suppose to a certain extent, not losing at home to Ireland was probably welcome given the way the previous couple of games had gone. Kumas played well that day. As I said, the important game is the one that often tends to get overlooked during that week.
I kind of agree with everything Leon says about the importance of where the under-21s got to point. I guess we're kind of in a few months of sort of one of those periods of peak Kumas is coming up, aren't we? He scores a few goals, he manages to play a lot of games, but then it's not long before his relationship with Toshak's getting a bit frosty and we're back into that old territory of the manager's relationships with some of his players. But yeah, things were certainly in terms of youth development really looking up by then. You can start to see what's coming at that point.
But for all the criticism that Toshak has received over the years, and some of it is absolutely justified, in terms of relationship with players, or certain players, individuals, the general kind of man management style and or lack of that he had, the fact that he kept still trying to, or kept still believing in Kumas, I think was admirable, even though, as Leon said, there was ultimately misplaced loyalty. He even goes and makes him captain for one of the games, one of the friendlies, you know, the following calendar year in 2008. But before we come to that, he puts in, you know, again, one of the great individual Wales performances, albeit in a friendly against Norway, which is the first fixture in the calendar year 2008. It was the first home game I missed in a long, long time because my wife had gone overdue with our first, so I couldn't get up to the race course. And he was just imperious that night against a decent Norway side.
I was there on the cup and really enjoyed it. I mean, I've said this in the article I wrote about Jason Kumas about 5 years ago now, I think. But my heart sank, actually, because the pitch was awful. And Norway had John Carew, who was in brilliant form for Aston Villa at the time, scoring a lot of headers. So I just thought, oh, they're just going to boot it up to Carew and he's gonna slaughter us. I didn't expect a midfielder to kind of dominate that game on the ground, which is what Kumas did. It was just like an astonishing level of skill, really, that he displayed in that match. But yeah, good Norway team. Riise played. Pedersen was in excellent form for Blackburn at the time as well. There was talk of really big clubs going after him. So from what I remember, something approaching sort of full strength team out, and we didn't, as usual, under Toshak. Especially in defence, it was Craig Morgan and Louis Nyatanga at centre back. Yeah, it was excellent, really good performance. And we thought, okay, right, together with sort of the under 21s doing well. Maybe Kumas now, in the absence of Giggs, is going to really step up, and he's going to be the main creative force. And we've got Bellamy to come back in, and Bale is looking really promising. It's just that feeling of like, okay, this let's go, let's see something now. And I have to admit, I was quite excited at that point. It's going to be a better next few months.
I'd regained belief, you see, at this point, because it wavered after the Crook Park game, wavered again after that Cyprus game, but same. I'm easily...
Yeah, yeah. You kind of have to be an optimist as a Wales fan, don't you? I mean, otherwise you'd have, like most of the Welsh public, you'd have just given up a long time ago. But you just have to keep that optimism alive somehow, and you sort of look for something, even if it's just, you know, kids coming through or whatever. But you know, you have to.
As I said, I couldn't get to that game, but I consoled myself with getting hold of a signed shirt. We wore yellow, we wore Kappa, so it was the final, I think, Kappa kits that reintroduced the watermark dragon on it. Red home, obviously, but yellow away, yellow and red. Really nice shirt. The most obvious, because often most autographs are really just difficult to read, they're just a scribble. The one that catches your eye, you're given, you know, it's a national shirt, and there's Kumas, and there was Davis, and it's Mel Pedic, the physio.
Wrexham legend.
I can only assume at the time, I have not double checked this for the purposes of this recording, I can only assume he was part of the backroom team, or maybe he was just helping out because he was, you know, was at the racecourse or what, I don't know. But that's the signature that most people's eyes are drawn to.
No, physio. He was a physio.
He was. There we go. So we go and play probably about as meaningless a friendly as they come away in Luxembourg the following month, where we win 2-0. Fred Eastwood scores both the goals, continues really kind of encouraging start to international football. And then a young man called Ashley Williams makes his debut, having been plucked from Stockport County. Do you want to tell the story of how he was discovered, Leon?
Sorry, but yes, it's Flynn again. Wayne Hennessy was on loan from Wolves at Stockport County, and Flynn had just gone to a Stockport game to keep an eye on him and his progress. It was during this run where he kept 9 clean sheets, I think it was, which was broke a very long-standing record in the Football League. Showed that they were defensively sound at the time. And Flynn noticed that one of Stockport's defenders had the name Williams. And he would just basically ask the question of anyone with a Welsh name. So he thought, oh, I wonder about this guy. And Peter Ward, who is another Wrexham legend, Flynn signed for Wrexham in the 90s, was Jim Gannon was Stockport manager at the time, and Peter Ward was assisting him. So he put a phone call into Peter Ward to just, can you just ask the question of your centre-back called Williams if he has any Welsh blood, and because I was quite impressed by him. And it came back that he did have a Welsh grandfather, but bizarrely, on his mother's side, and his grandfather's name was Rowlands, so the Williams name had absolutely nothing to do with his Welsh connection whatsoever, so it was just sheer luck. It did turn out that he qualified to play for Wales. And Flynn said to Toshack, there's a centre-half at Stockport who's worth keeping an eye on, and Toshack went and had a look and saw enough to call him into the squad. And 80-odd caps later and a European Championship semi-final, we're talking about a bona fide Welsh legend, don't we?
Absolutely. Other debutants on that game, Thomas Michael came on in the second half, and I can remember thinking, okay, great. I mean, Hennessy had emerged and looked part. But again, it was just, okay, he's another player playing towards the top of the league in England. Can't remember if Hull were in the Premier League at that particular point, but they weren't far away. And again, thinking, okay, this is filling up the squad with a bit more quality and not just numbers. And Owen Tudor-Jones came on for his debut. Not a huge amount to say about a friendly win in Luxembourg, though, is there, I don't suppose?
No, the next one's probably a bit more significant, isn't it? The Iceland game a couple of months later. Bellamy gets his 50th cap, but it's the youngest ever TP Wales more debuts. You get Vokes, Collison, Ched Evans. They join the likes of Ledley, Gunter and Hennessy, who were already established in the first team setup. But in that Iceland game, you can start to see something with Ashley Williams, like you mentioned, something that starts to look much more like familiar personnel that will emerge in the era when we're going to be more successful coming later. So that spring definitely sees the budding of a real crop of players who are going to be part of that transition.
Manil Jed Evans scores on his debut with a cheeky little back heel. And he was the last player to score on his debut until who? Quiz question.
Is it Ben Woodburn?
Yeah, it is. You should pose that question the other way around. So Ben Woodburn was the first since, because for probably obvious reasons, a lot of people have sort of erased Jed Evans from their memory. Yeah, so it was a summer tour, or end of season tour to Iceland and the Netherlands. Lose 2-0 to the Netherlands. But again, you're looking at their side and it's just stellar, stellar players. You look at ours and it's a little smattering of experience in the shape of sort of Carl Robinson. Craig Bellamy comes on again. He was substituted both games with 50th and 51st caps. But again, it's three caps for Ashley Williams. It's a second cap for Ched Evans. It's a seventh cap for Neil Ardley. So it's probably not a bad result.
I watched a little snippet of that game earlier, and between Schneider and Robin, they're just a class apart from us. Those two scored the goals, I think, and they were right at their peak at that time, and there was no way that kind of inexperienced team was going to deal with them the way they were at that point.
No, I mean, I imagine they probably weren't in top gear either, but I mean, it's Van Bronckhorst, it's Nigel de Jong, it's Dirk Kuyt, Van Nistelrooy, Van der Vaart, Van der Sar still in goal, John Heitinger, André Oyer. There's no such thing as a bad Netherlands team, I don't suppose, is there? I know had their moments of late. So again, we suddenly think, actually, there's a little bit of positivity here. We'd kept four clean sheets on the spin until the Netherlands game. Okay, no great shame in losing out there. We then come back to one of those August friendlies, lose at home 2-1 to Georgia. Bose Myhill, I think, makes it a little bit of a mistake for their winner from memory. Georgia weren't very good, but then neither were we. And we scrape a win home to Azerbaijan. Sam Vokes comes off the bench to score his first goal. But a win is a win is a win.
And Paul Parry retires, doesn't he, in between the two games then? There's the next little change in the guard in terms of some of our... I don't know if Paul Parry was ever quite a senior player, but he'd been around a bit longer. And he's felt, I think, maybe underused and I think like a spare part, given the limited resources we had under Toshack. So he decides to call it a day there rather than go out to Russia. But just to come back to Jason Kumas, I kind of assumed what we all kind of assume about Kumas. And it's at this point, Toshack makes some public comment along the lines of he never knows if Kumas is going to turn up from one game to the other. But as I was looking through the fixtures and looking through the games, I kind of changed my mind a little bit. At this point, since he scored two against Ireland, Kumas had played seven games out of eight. He only missed the 0-0 with Germany because he was suspended. And he was quite vocal after that Germany game about his frustration about being suspended. This seems to be one of the periods where he was turning up regularly. He was having some good games. Okay, he's up and down that way. Kumas always is. Just another unnecessary little division is sown alongside Earnshaw having been, I think, left out in the Georgia friendly. It seems to be an unnecessary kind of division created in the way that Toshak deals with bringing through the youngsters, but is quite cold and cutting in the way he treats some of the more experienced players. And that Azerbaijan win is okay, but again, it's marked by that imbalance in the squad and that frustration that maybe if we had a few more of these players playing for the manager, that we could be putting better performances together. Something else on that Azerbaijan game, Gunter nearly scores. We talk about, will Gunter ever get a Wales goal? Gets the ball taken off him to miss a chance to score in that game. I watched that back today. Unbelievable. His career could have been so different.
I hope that as an Azerbaijani defender can look at himself in the mirror.
Maybe if that goal had gone in, we'd be talking about Chris Gunter, goal-scoring fullback extraordinaire. I don't know. Maybe that would have been the sort of start of something. But But I'll take him as he turned out, to be fair to him.
But that's the point I was trying to make about Kumas, is that he's now pretty much the linchpin midfielder for Toshak. Certainly Toshak wants him to be, and that's fine. You do wonder with a player like Kumas, that belief in him is beginning to rub off, it's beginning to sink in, there's a little bit more self-belief on his part. The rumours that he deliberately got himself booked to miss an away game, etc., never really went away. And then all of a sudden, and I suppose this probably betrays perhaps Toshak's, is it ego? Is it almost a recklessness perhaps in terms of dealing with the press, almost excessive honesty? So he missed the penalty against Azerbaijan, if you remember. Toshak says that about Kumas for the game out in Russia. When we get to the boarding gate, they'll announce gate number 26, flight boarding for Moscow, and I'll have a look around. We'll know then whether Jason's coming or not. It is a great quote, to be fair. I'll give Toshak his credit. There was a myriad of banal ways he could have made that point, but he's made it well. And then Phil Stead writes in Red Dragons, predictably, Kumas did not appear at gate 26 or any other gate. And again, as you say, one player who would no longer be available was Paul Parry, who retired at 28 after being left on the bench. Quote unquote, I felt like a spare part when I turned up for Wales. And when two under-21 internationals go on before you against countries like Azerbaijan, you don't have to be told where you stand in the pecking order.
I have some sympathy with that. I mean, Paul Parry was not a terrible player. I remember watching him at City quite a lot, and he wasn't a world beater, but he hadn't really had much of a shot in Toshak's teams. But the more I think about that quote about Kumas, at that particular time, it's so poorly judged. I mean, he's scored 5 goals in 7 games. He's only missed 1 game in 8 suspended. And this is the time that Toshak picks to have a little publicly the only player of that type we have in the squad. And it can be, I suppose, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's not a coincidence that Kumas's commitment and turning up and performances for Wales drop off. And he's another one who, having probably had another couple of years that he could have given us, it's those misjudgments which just taints his handling of the first team for all the talent that's coming through by this point.
And that's why I like doing these this way, in this forensic sort of manner, is that's handled, the way he comes out and says that about Kumas, exactly as you're saying, at that critical time in how Kumas was being to himself, that's a valid criticism. That's not the sort of criticism you tend to hear levelled at Toshak. I mean, there were some other rumours around sort of Paul Parry that it would be not right to raise here, that was also an influence on his decision. What bothered me about that quote, and I remember at the time, because Toshak said he would start in Moscow because he was juggling the squad across the two fixtures. But clearly, Toshak was proved right in leaving Parry on the bench. I mean, this is just one of the truisms of football, because Vokes goes on and scores the winner. That's just how it is, isn't it?
It seems a strange time for Paul Parry to have a bit of a pop, considering we had won the game. Okay, it was a struggle, but you come away with 3 points and you look ahead to the next one. And the reports all said that he was likely to start in Moscow against Russia. So he was a good player. I remember him, he had good pace. I remember he did pretty well for Cardiff during that run to the FA Cup final, didn't he? But he was not someone who I really felt had the kind of spirit and sort of level of determination that was going to really make him into a proper international player. I never really kind of felt convinced by him in a Wales shirt. And I don't think it was any great loss that he retired, but it's, as always, perhaps Toshak could have handled things more delicately than he did. La 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 la